Warren Olney back with To The Point. Arizona is old news. The New York Times calls Alabama's new immigration law the cruelest and most unforgiving in the nation. Groups opposed to illegal immigration say it is the right way to go. But it won't go into effect tomorrow, as had been scheduled. A federal judge has delayed implementation while she considers a number of constitutional issues. Daniel Altshuler writes about immigration for The Nation, the Christian Science Monitor, and other print and internet publications. Daniel Altshuler, good to have you on our program.
Thanks very much for having me, Warren.
How did this come about in Alabama?
Well, I think you really have to understand the electoral politics of the thing. Last year, I think the Alabama Republicans saw an opportunity to take the state legislature for the first time since Reconstruction, 136 years. And so they issued a platform called the Handshake with Alabama that included very strict enforcement provisions or proposals against illegal immigrants. And this was, I think, very opportunistic on them, on their part, in the sense that, you know, this is a state with a very small immigrant population, but they saw this as an opportunity to gin up their base. They ended up riding into power, and they saw this provision, this law, which is by far the strongest in terms of enforcement mechanisms in the country, as a way of delivering on their promises.
What are some of the features that make it so strong?
Well, I mean, we look at Arizona, and there was a huge national outcry against what happened in Arizona, but this law goes further. For instance, it forces students and parents to demonstrate their immigration status when registering children in elementary and secondary education, which raises the concern that that parents won't enroll their students if there's anyone in the family who is undocumented, and this would violate a constitutional right to public education. It would also become a crime under state law to rent to undocumented immigrants, for an undocumented immigrant to seek work. It would also nullify all contracts with undocumented immigrants. The intent of this law is to get undocumented immigrants out of the state of Alabama.
Is it a movement that has also caught fire in other states as well?
Well, these types of laws, certainly, you know, there's been a huge push towards what has been referred to as copycat legislation, copycats of the Arizona law. And I think, you know, where we are right now, Alabama is the epicenter. It is where the strongest such law was passed. Most states, in fact, defeated these laws last year. The vast majority of them did. However, I think particularly in the southeast United States right now, we have a situation where, you know, some states, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, have passed it, and in next year's legislative session, those states in this region that weren't able to pass it, you'll have restrictionist Republican legislators trying to pass that legislation next year.
Utah and Indiana also have passed bills of this kind, and I think Pennsylvania is at least considering one. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see proposals all over the country. And right now, you know, this is something where, as I said, most states have beaten back these types of laws, but they will crop up in not just in red states, but also in blue states. And, you know, right now we're seeing an issue, you know, we're waiting in Alabama for the judge to rule, but, you know, there are going to be a lot of different court rulings. And, you know, for proponents of these laws, the more conflicting court rulings there are, the more they like their chances, because the more likely that the Supreme Court will take up the case.
You didn't mention the law's provisions with regard to the police and illegal immigration or potential illegal immigrants. So what does it provide in that context?
Yeah, well, I suppose that is consistent with what was in the Arizona law. The point is that it's going to empower local police who have reasonable suspicion that someone is in the country illegally. It's not very clear how they would get reasonable suspicion, but it allows them, if they have reasonable suspicion that someone is an illegal immigrant, to detain them.
Okay.
Put them in immigration proceedings.
Daniel Altshuler, once again, reporter on the issue of immigration for The Nation, the Christian Science Monitor, and other organizations as well. Cecilia Wong is director of the ACLU's Immigration Rights Project. She's based in California, but she went to Alabama to argue this case in federal court. Once again, a judge in Alabama has now postponed the implementation of the law while she considers the issue. Cecilia Wong, good to have you in our program.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
What special issues does this Alabama law raise that other states, including Arizona, have not?
Well, I think Daniel covered some of them. The Alabama law, HB 56, goes well beyond even the draconian and comprehensive anti-immigrant measure that Arizona passed in blocking school children, even U.S. citizen school children, from attending schools, in requiring Alabamians who to provide proof of U.S. citizenship when registering to vote, and in making it a crime either to rent as a landlord or as a tenant any housing, and nullifying contracts when one of the parties is alleged to be an undocumented immigrant. The legislators who passed this law explicitly said that their purpose was to make everyday life so difficult for undocumented immigrants that they would leave. I think the problem that you see is that the law is so extreme that while it takes aim at undocumented immigrants, U.S. citizens and lawful immigrants are also caught in the crossfire. All Americans should be very concerned about the civil liberties implications of laws like Alabama's HB 56.
Children in the United States born of parents who are not citizens do become citizens. Are other U.S. citizens also affected by this?
Yes, I think that all U.S. citizens who might be suspected of being foreign at the hands of even good police officers in Alabama or landlords or employers are at great risk of discrimination, whether you are driving down the street, if you speak English with an accent, or if you seem to be a foreigner. I think you're at risk. And the top law enforcement officials in the state of Alabama have stepped forward to say that they believe the law enforcement provisions in HB 56 lead to racial profiling. They have come forward in court and provided declarations both in the federal government's case and in our ACLU Civil Rights Coalition case to say that there is no way for a police officer in Alabama or in any other state to develop reasonable suspicion that someone is an undocumented immigrant in the course of a traffic stop. The only way for an officer to develop that suspicion is to rely on stereotypes.
Cecilia Wong, again, the director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project. Mark Krikorian is executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, based in Washington, favors stricter immigration control. Mark Krikorian, good to have you back on our program.
Glad to be here, Warren.
What about the idea that a state would explicitly attempt to make life difficult for undocumented workers in order to drive them out? Is that appropriate?
That's the whole point of immigration enforcement. I mean, literally, the entire point. The point of immigration enforcement is not to arrest and deport illegal immigrants. That's part of what goes on, but that's, frankly, a secondary goal. The goal is to effect attrition of the illegal population by making it clear that illegal immigrants can't get jobs and can't get driver's license and basically can't live a normal life because of their illegal status. The whole point of the ban on illegal employment is to make it difficult to live here illegally. So challenging the idea of making life difficult for illegal immigrants is challenging the very premise of immigration enforcement, and that doesn't surprise me because the opponents of this kind of legislation oppose immigration enforcement as such, and this really kind of helps flush them out.
Well, what about the threats to American citizens that we heard about, and I'm sure that Cecilia Wong can list those provisions of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that she thinks are violated by this kind of legislation?
They're phony. The concerns are fake. There is not going to be any. Cops are not going to be walking down the street, looking at people and saying, "Hey, Pablo, you look like an illegal alien. Show me your green card." The cops have no interest in doing that. The point of this is to empower police so that when they do encounter illegal immigrants, they can help the federal government do its job. And there are other provisions of this law that, frankly, should not. I mean, I think the judge was wrong in suspending the whole thing, because one of the provisions requires mandatory use of the E-Verify online screening system by all employers when they hire somebody to make sure that the name and Social Security number is legitimate. And the Supreme Court earlier this year upheld that over the ACLU/Chamber of Commerce objections. And that's, frankly, probably the most important element in driving illegal immigrants out of Alabama is making it impossible for them to get work.
Let me go back to Cecilia Wong. She isn't able to stay with us very long. How do you respond to what we just heard from Mark Krikorian?
Well, first, fortunately, federal courts in Arizona, U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, which covers the western United States, federal court in Georgia, have all disagreed with Mark Krikorian. The fundamental problem with what the anti-immigration movement has put out there in the form of these state laws is that they assume, along with the state legislators who passed this law, that there's an on-off switch in federal immigration law, that someone's either an illegal alien or they're not. And the fact is that Congress passed a comprehensive system for the federal government to determine someone's immigration status. That can be a complex matter. To give you one example of where the state laws conflict with federal law in, for example, criminalizing failure to comply with federal alien registration requirements. If you are a Haitian and you've come into the United States on a tourist visa or a student visa, and you've overstayed because of the terrible situation in Haiti, the federal government has given you protected status under a program called Temporary Protected Status. Nationals of certain countries like Haiti, where there is a dire situation, are permitted to remain. But the federal government doesn't issue such foreign nationals a document that proves that they're still here under the auspices of Temporary Protected Status. So state laws like HB 56 wrongly assume that there is a binary system, legal, illegal, and that state officers can make that determination. That's simply not the case, and that's exactly what the federal courts in Arizona and Georgia and hopefully soon in other states will recognize, that federal law has comprehensively regulated immigration enforcement. This is not, by the way, as the state of Alabama has tried to make it, a political issue. This is not about a particular administration deciding to come in and make policy choices. This is a decision that Congress has made, that immigration status is flexible, it's complex, it balances many concerns that our national government has, and there's no way for states to step into that mix without violating people's civil rights.
Cecilia Wong with the ACLU will stay with us for the whole program. I didn't realize that. Mark Krikorian, quickly your response before we need to go to a break. Go ahead.
When a state wants to find out who's an illegal immigrant, they call the Law Enforcement Support Center. It's an organization set up. It's part of the DHS. It's set up by Congress, based in Vermont. Responds to constantly, every day, responds to inquiries as to somebody's legal status. So the federal government is the one determining, in fact, is required to respond to states when they inquire as to someone's legal status. So, you know, there's really not a problem here. I mean, the objection here is quite simple. These kind of laws would successfully reduce the illegal immigrant population, and the opponents of the law don't want the illegal population to go down. It's as simple as that.
Is that right, Ms. Wong? Are you opposed, you and others in your coalition, to enforcement of immigration laws?
No, I think that Mark Krikorian is missing the point. Obviously, we believe in the rule of law, as all Americans do. The point is that when you take a law that's so extreme in pursuing the goal of enforcing immigration law, and states are doing it in a way that conflicts with the federal system for doing it, you're going to end up with some serious civil rights abuses. To take the Law Enforcement Support Center that Mr. Krikorian mentioned, that system is not designed for the purpose that HB 56 assumes. The federal government has explained in its lawsuits in Arizona and in Alabama that when an inquiry is made to the federal center, it can take, on average, 80 minutes for a response to be received, and it can take up to 2 days in some cases where a paper file needs to be retrieved to get to the bottom of the person's status. Now, HB 56 assumes and indeed requires that if a police officer in Alabama pulls someone over for speeding and develops suspicion that the person's an undocumented immigrant, that they're going to hold that person at the side of the road for 80 minutes. Pending an outcome of that federal verification. the federal government has come in and explained that is not the purpose of that database, and nothing in federal law authorizes such prolonged detention based simply on an officer's suspicion or hunch.
All right. Obviously, a lot of details to be talked about. We're going to talk about the politics of all of this as well in just a moment after we take a very brief break. On Reporter's Notebook later on, Dick Cheney's new biography, What's New and What's Not. You can join the conversation on our To the Point Facebook page. We'll be back in a minute with To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
We're only back with To the Point. We've been talking about the ins and outs of HB 56, House Bill 56 in Alabama, scheduled to go into effect tomorrow. The toughest of the immigration laws or anti-immigration laws being proposed in several states, enacted in several as well, and we'll ask a bit later on if it's likely that this issue will ultimately end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. In the meantime, it has become a political issue and certainly has in Alabama. Daniel Altshuler, let me go back to you with the Christian Science Monitor and The Nation and other publications, a reporter on immigration. Obviously, Mark Krikorian and others have organized to propose such laws in various places. Are there organizations now, in addition to the ACLU, that are organized in the other direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something you have to look at on a state-by-state basis. One of the reasons that such a comprehensive bill was able to pass in Alabama is that the capacity on the ground has been lower. There's a smaller immigrant population, and there are fewer organizations that work with and advocate for the immigrant community. They're trying to organize now and have been this year. But, you know, you look at different states, and I think often you can see, you know, for instance, why was a state like Tennessee able to push back similar legislative provisions? Well, there's a stronger coalition on the ground there. And I think there are numerous coalitions, but you have to, you know, each one is a state-by-state thing, and we have to see what the different capacity on the ground is.
All right. One of the questions, of course, is federal immigration reform, which hasn't taken place. Both sides of the argument would agree on that. The question becomes, before the Supreme Court acts, if in fact it does, before Congress does anything, there's going to be a presidential election. Lynn Tremonte is Deputy Director of America's Voice. That's a pro-immigrant organization working to pass comprehensive immigration reform based in Washington, D.C. Lynn Tremonte, thanks a lot for being on our program today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Tell us about first of all, let's look at President Obama. What promises did he make when he was running in 2008 in this context? What's he been able to achieve?
Well, when President Obama was a candidate, he talked a lot about immigration on the campaign trail, especially when he's talking to Latino audiences. And he really understood that this is a huge defining issue for the Latino vote. It's a personal issue. It's about family. It's about people's place in society, whether they're welcome in this country or not. And, you know, he had a huge advantage there in contrast to the Republican Party that was heading very hard line following the strategy laid out by Mark Krikorian. So President Obama did very well among Latinos, in large part because of his strong outreach on immigration. Since then, you know, I think there's been a lot of disappointment in the community because immigration wasn't the number one priority for the administration from the outset. They had other things they were working on, and there was a lot of, you know, demonstration, a lot of anger being expressed about the record number of deportations, the lack of progress on comprehensive immigration reform in Congress. There's been some new changes at DHS. They're looking at prioritizing deportations, and I think that the Latino community is optimistic, but cautiously optimistic, that that will result in some real relief for some important people in our community, some people that should not be priorities for deportation. But we really need to see how that new policy is implemented, and I think that, you know, time will tell whether that you know, allows President Obama to connect again with this community that he knows is so important.
So very recently, then, there have been changes with regard to priorities for deportation, but you're saying under President Obama there's been a record number of deportations?
Absolutely. He's deported more people per year than George W. Bush, which held the previous record.
Okay, let me go back to Mark Krikorian with the Center for Immigration Studies. So we just heard that the policies that you advocate were bad for the Republicans when it comes to the Latino vote. How do the candidates now, looking strong for the Republican nomination, Rick Perry, Mitt Romney, Michelle Bachmann, perhaps still in the running. How do they look to you?
Well, to begin with, Obama got about two-thirds of the Hispanic vote, which is what Democratic presidential candidates get. I mean, he did better than Kerry, but Kerry was kind of a hapless candidate who lost. There wasn't any unique sort of surge in Hispanic voting percentage for President Obama. About two-thirds of Hispanics are Democrats, and that's kind of the way it turned out. But as far as the coming election, of the candidates, frankly, Perry and Romney aren't kind of similar on immigration. Neither one of them's that good. Romney's a little better, from my perspective, a little more hawkish. Not so much because he believes it, but because he ran for president earlier and had to, take a somewhat more hawkish stand in trying to get the nomination. Perry, despite his sort of coyote shooting cowboy image, is actually pretty bad on immigration. I mean, he's for amnestying illegal immigrants through the vehicle of a guest worker program. He's for in-state tuition for illegal aliens subsidized by taxpayers. He's against fencing on the border. I mean, he's not very good on immigration at all, but the whole Texas swagger kind of belies that. The real difference, though, I think, between him and George W. Bush, which is where people will draw comparisons, is that I don't think Governor Perry actually is all that emotionally invested in a dovish immigration policy. In other words, amnesty and increased immigration, all the stuff that the other guests are in favor of. For him, it's really kind of a, stick a finger in the wind political issue. George W. Bush actually believed all of that stuff, deeply believed in open borders with Mexico, amnesty for illegal immigrants, and all that. Neither Romney nor Perry has particularly strong views on immigration, and they'll kind of trim their sails one way or the other depending on political circumstances.
Lynn Tremonte, back to you. How did Governor Perry do in Texas with the Hispanic vote? Does he, if he looks bad to Mark Krikorian, does he look good to you?
I think it's funny that Mark thinks that he is so bad on immigration from his point of view, because I think the only thing Governor Perry has said that's different than what other Republican candidates are saying is that he supports the state version of the DREAM Act, but he's very clear that he opposes the federal version. So I find his position extremely confusing. I think that he has shaped up to be a deportation-only candidate so far, like the rest of them. I don't think he's offering anything new to the Latino community. But we'll see as the debates progress if the media can really zero in on the key question, which is what would you do as president with the 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country? The candidates all want to talk about the border, securing the border, as if that was the only thing to do, but they won't ever answer the question about what do you do next? What do you do with this population of folks? Do you follow Mr. Krikorian's attrition through enforcement strategy and try to get them to leave, or do you have some sort of a realistic, pragmatic approach where you say, all right, we need to know who's here. We need to register people, get them through background checks, get them paying taxes. We need a controlled legal system that works.
Well, will Hispanics and others who are concerned about this issue look at Republicans, given the fact that, as you said earlier, President Obama has set a record for the number of deportations per year?
Well, when Republican candidates are talking about the need to end birthright citizenship, the need to pass different state laws like the Alabama law, when they're running campaign ads like Sharon Angles that show Latino faces sneaking across the border as if that was the only representation of Latinos and that's the only thing that they do, it's hard for Republicans to appeal to this segment of the electorate.
But Sharon Angle isn't running for president. What about Romney and Perry? They're not advocating the end of birthright citizenship, are they?
Well, Michelle Bachmann is, and I think the others need to be asked that question directly. I would love to know where they stand on that.
Mark Krikorian, does Michelle Bachmann look good to you?
Well, she looks, she's clearly more hawkish on immigration, there's no question. Just to sort of fill in, Perry's actually against ending birthright citizenship. He's been on the record saying that, and he's in favor of amnesty for all illegal immigrants. I mean, he's already said all of that. There's no secret about his record. Yes, Bachmann is clearly more hawkish on immigration, though she really hasn't made it a big deal, and she's not going to be president anyway. I mean, she's running for vice president. So, at this point, it seems to me, in the real world, the question is Romney versus Perry. And there's just no question that despite their the sort of persona of Romney, sort of, you know, an East Coast, effete rich guy, and Perry as the coyote shooting guy who brought himself up from the bootstraps in Texas, on immigration, they're actually, Romney's a good deal more hawkish. Although, again, I don't think he's all that sincere about it. It's just kind of a political, convenience. And actually, Lynn's point about talking about the border, I think, is accurate. Even with regard to Perry, people, it's just easier for politicians, especially those that aren't very strong on enforcing immigration laws inside the country, to posture about border enforcement. There was a story in Politico, which is a political website and newspaper here in Washington, that followed Romney at a meeting in Iowa, and he was asked what was he going to do about immigration. Apparently, the first thing he said was, predator drones on the border. Like, that's really going to do much of anything. I mean, it's that's the kind of posturing that I think she was talking about, and she's actually right about that.
Lynn Tremonti, do you expect President Obama to make a big issue out of this?
I'd love to see him make it a big issue. I think it's a really smart issue for him to talk about. We've looked at a lot of polls over the years, and Latino voters and swing voters want the same thing on this issue. They don't think mass deportation is practical or possible. They don't. This attrition through enforcement idea, I think, is another laughable policy, the idea that you could force 11 million people to self-deport to countries where life is already tough and where there aren't job opportunities to begin with is just, it's an impossibility. So given that, given those choices, or given a realistic choice where you require people to get legal after going through background checks and making sure they're paying taxes, it has strong overwhelming support across all demographic groups.
Okay.
So, yep.
Let me go back to Daniel Altshuler with the Christian Science Monitor and The Nation. You said earlier that this is a state-by-state matter from a political standpoint. So is the presidential election, with states, of course, providing votes for the Electoral College. Immigration is down, illegal immigration as well. Are there states where the Hispanic vote might make the difference between presidential candidates?
Well, I think, you know, we could look at last year's elections, at the midterm elections, and look at the Southwest and what was referred to as a Latino firewall, where Republican candidates so alienated the Latino community. Lynn mentioned Sharon Engel before, that you had overwhelming Latino support for Harry Reid in that particular race. These races, if you look at Latino decisions polls, they were not the two-thirds that Mark was speaking about earlier in the 2008 election. We're talking about 80 and 90% of Latino votes. And it's states like that in the Southwest, for instance. You think about Florida, you think about Texas, states like North Carolina, where this issue will be a very big deal.
Mark Krikorian, what about that? Are you possibly proposing a recipe for a Republican candidate that would be a loser?
No. I mean, look, there's a way to turn off any kind of voter, and that is to, basically communicate that you don't like them and that you're disrespectful toward them. And Republicans who rant and rave and sort of conflate the immigration issue with Hispanic American voters can in fact get themselves in trouble. But, you know, that's kind of a fringe thing. I mean, look what happened in last year's elections. There were six new Hispanic members of the House of Representatives, all of them Republicans. Susana Martinez was elected governor of New Mexico. We could well see on the vice presidential ticket next year Marco Rubio from Florida. So, you know, Republicans are not going to get the majority of Hispanic voters. That's just not going to happen.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're running short. Lynn Tremonti, what about that? What about all these Hispanics that are being elected as Republicans?
Well, they're not being elected by Latino voters. We did a report on that. We looked at available polling, and they're not winning majorities of Latino voters. The Latinos in those states went for the Democratic candidate who was far better on immigration. Hardliners like Governor Sandoval and Governor Martinez did not do well among Latino voters.
Okay. Still with us, Cecilia Wong with the ACLU Immigrant Rights Project, who argued the case about Alabama in federal court, now still pending before a judge there. Before we have to close this conversation, what about the possibility of these cases getting to the U.S. Supreme Court? Will there be any chance for reform or any kind of action before that takes place?
Well, as you may know, the state of Arizona has filed a petition for certiorari with the Supreme Court already, seeking review of the U.S. Court of Appeals decision affirming the preliminary injunction. I think it's clear to any lawyer who follows the Supreme Court that it would be premature for the court to step in here. We have the courts that have reached the merits of these anti-immigrant laws in Arizona and in Georgia and in Indiana have unanimously enjoined parts of the law because they're unconstitutional. And when you have lower federal courts in accord, there's really no reason for the Supreme Court to step in. I think that state legislatures looking at similar legislation in the next session should be very cautious and should follow the lead of the reasonable legislators in about a dozen states that decided not to pass these laws. They're unconstitutional, and they are bad policy. And I hope that we won't see further action in that regard in the coming legislative session.
Mark Krikorian, do you want to see this go to the Supreme Court?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Ms. Wong is right that nobody knows. Really, ultimately, all important political questions in the nation depend on which side of the bed Justice Kennedy gets up on in the morning. I mean, all of us are basically ruled by his whims, and so it could go either way if it ends up before the Supreme Court. What I would like to see, actually, is if there's any lesson to take from this, is for state legislators in January, when the sessions start up again around the country, is to focus on, at least at first, on the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit, which is mandatory use of the E-Verify system in hiring. The Supreme Court has already said that this is permitted under statute. Georgia had that in its law, and the Justice Department didn't even bother to sue Georgia, presumably because they know they can't win. And so I think the hopeful part would be seeing more and more and more states passing mandatory E-Verify. And if that's stopped in some states, for instance, Tennessee was one place that was mentioned, that was actually a business coalition that wanted to keep its sources of cheap labor.
Ms. Wong, is there are you okay with the E-Verify if the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld it?
Well, the Supreme Court case that Mark Krikorian is talking about, Chamber of Commerce versus Whiting, was a very narrow one. We believe the decision was not correctly decided, but obviously it is the law of the land now. The narrow question is whether a state can require all employers to comply with the electronic verification, E-Verify, and the Supreme Court said that Congress explicitly permitted states to do that. I think that all of these state laws, from Arizona to Alabama to South Carolina, they present a very different question, and they go well beyond the bounds of E-Verify or even employer sanctions, and they are really going to have a huge civil rights impact, not just on undocumented immigrants, but on lawful immigrants,
okay,
U.S. citizens.
Daniel Altshuler, very quickly earlier, Mark Krikorian identified the pro illegal immigration organizations with the Chamber of Commerce. That's probably a simplification, but what's been the reaction of business people to E-Verify?
Well, I think it depends on what sector we're in. I think, you know, areas that require, that are labor intensive and require immigrant labor are very concerned. So in particular, issues like agriculture, so fruit and vegetable producers who need a lot of labor to pick fruits and vegetables. Similarly, greenhouse and nursery operations. These folks are very concerned. I've spoken to people down here in Alabama who say, you know, if this law is passed, we're not sure where we're going to get our labor and whether our businesses will be able to survive.
Okay, a lot of issues involved, obviously, and much heated political rhetoric on both sides to be expected as the campaigns go on, both in the states and nationally as well. Thank you all. Daniel Altshuler with the Christian Science Monitor and The Nation, Cecilia Wong with the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project, Mark Krikorian with the Center for Immigration Studies, and Lynn Tremonte with America's Voice, pro-immigrant organization. Good to have all of you on our program. Thanks very much for being with us.